Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Travel Notes, a radio show and podcast where we use music as a medium to explore ways in which we are all connected. I'm your host, Grace McNally, and I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who tunes in online and on OHM Radio 96.3 FM. This episode, we're traveling to the wonderful city of Toronto, and if you haven't been, like me, I guarantee you'll want to visit after this episode. Today, we're featuring a musical group called Kune, also known as Canada's Global Orchestra, which was developed from a major initiative by the Royal Conservatory of Music in 2017 to explore and celebrate Canada's cultural diversity and pluralism. In 2021, Kune became an independent collective. A little bit of background before we dive into our convo with our special guests. So Kune is an 11-piece collective made up of 10 immigrant musicians from all over the world and one Métis Canadian. Their artistic practices captures and recreates the experience of living in Toronto, one of the world's most diverse cities. Kune is a space which to remember our roots and learn from each other's differences. Together, Kune members compose, arrange, and perform music that honors their cultural roots and creates connections with others through curiosity, experimentation, and dialogue. The musicians hail from all corners of the globe, from Peru, Burkina Faso, to Cuba and Turkey, and play instruments as diverse as they are. Today on the show, we have two of Kune's very own percussionists with us, Matias Richart and Alini Morales. Let's dive in. Welcome to Travel Notes.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So you guys are both percussionists and you come from different cultural and musical backgrounds. Can you tell me a little bit more about your instrument focus and its role in Kune? Alini, we can start with you.
Sure. My background, I kind of learned music through Brazilian culture. So I play all sorts of hand drumming, like also very specific drumming to different cultures and traditions that come from Brazil, I guess I would say that. And in Kune, that's what I do. That's what I bring. I'm also a singer. So I think I bring that to the pot as well. You know, the fact that I play percussion and most of the time, pretty comfortably, I can sing and play percussion.
That's not easy.
And I got accommodated. I think I need to to keep practicing, you know, sometimes, especially in Kune, you know, there's a pattern that is kind of different to my, you know, comfort zone. And then I have to sing and I'm like, oh, I need to, you know, I need to work on this. Yeah, that's kind of my approach in Kune and in general, you know, with all my music practice, like percussion and singing.
Really cool.
Yeah.
What are some of the instruments you play from Brazil?
I think I played like a very Brazilian one, pandeiro, which is kind of the tambourine with, you know, like the Brazilian tambourine.
Uh-huh.
I play berimbau. I play... I brought here to Canada this particular tradition. I started teaching here when I arrived 22 years ago, called Maracatu de Baque Virado. And the ensemble of a Maracatu group is like composed of five percussive instruments, which is like shakers, you know, bass drums, snares. But I think very Brazilian is like pandeiro, berimbau. I play also hand drums, congas, and which is not really Brazilian, but like with a kind of a Brazilian style of playing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm a guitarist, but when I was in Brazil, I picked up I learned a little bit of pandeiro, like very, very small, but I loved, such a fun instrument. And just some of the songs from Brazil for like percussion, you know, do you know Baden Powell?
The song, you mean?
Or the
Baden Powell.
Ah, okay. I thought you said berimbau. Okay, Baden Powell. Yes, for sure. Yeah.
He's like my idol. So yeah, I love how he works with percussion and guitar together. It's really cool. Wow, that's so interesting. And how about you, Matias? Did I get it right?
Yes, very good.
So I'm from Peru. I'm from Lima, and the first instrument I started playing when I was a kid was the cajón. And the cajón is that you've probably seen it. It's that box drum, and the cajón is a instrument from Lima, actually, from Peru. Like it originated there. Many people don't know it because now you can find it anywhere, and you know it's very famous with flamenco music.
Which was a Brazilian person who bought it into.
Yes, Ruben Dantas, very good, Brazil. So the cajón, it's a slightly different in Peru. It's a little bit different than the one you can find in the store, but it's basically the same idea. It's a wooden drum. And so I started, that was my first instrument. And then I started playing the drum set. And then I started playing other percussion instruments. I learned congas and timbales and other kind of like Caribbean sort of like, yeah, Afro-Latin drums. And in Cune, I play basically the drum set, although I play a little bit of a kind of mix of a drum kit and a percussion set. It's not like a full-on rock drum set.
It's like a hybrid kind of, yeah.
So that's what I
Cool.
play in Cune.
Cool. I'm curious. I love to like nerd out, so you guys can't go too deep into a subject. Like I will follow you there, but I'm curious about the origin of the cajon. And so how did it come find its way to Peru or like come out of Peru?
So Peru has most countries in the Americas, Peru has a like a Afro-descendant population, no? People that, you know, were trafficked from Africa to the colonies. And so but the dynamics of slavery were a bit different in Peru than other countries, because there was not a big sort of like plantation economy. Enslaved Africans were mostly living in cities, and they had a different sort of kind of integration into the free society, let's say, no? So the Afro-Peruvian culture in was very focused in urban places, in urban cities in the coast mostly. And so these coastal cities, because they were sort of the center of the empire, like the colony, they were pretty diverse places even from the beginning. You know, they were founded by the Spanish, and they brought like and trafficked Africans, and also there were like indigenous populations living there, but sort of in the margins. And so from the beginning it was very diverse. And then when, you know, immigrants from other places started arriving, like from other places in Europe, other places in the Americas, even from some people from the Middle East, like we have a Palestinian refugee population, for example. And we also have Chinese and Japanese populations that
Cool.
came as indentured workers. So a pretty diverse place. And so the culture of Lima, of these cities, is called, we call it criollo, which is means Creole culture. And so the cajon is like the quintessential sort of Creole instrument of this style of music. And you know, there's different stories about the origin of the cajon. Of course, the African influence was important because in Peru, the only sort of culture that arrived in Peru that has a big hand drumming tradition is the African tradition. Indigenous people in Peru played drums, but mostly with sticks, and so did the Europeans. So some people say that, you know, because drums were forbidden in the colonies, enslaved Africans had to come up with other ways to create drums. So they kind of came up with this drum that looks like a box so that you can like hide it. You
That's smart.
know, the undercover drum. The other explanation was that at the time that the cajon came about, around the 19th century, like middle of the 19th century, the most like in fashion instrument, the hottest instrument was the harp. That was the instrument that was like putting all the parties, you know, making everybody dance. And so the harp, this kind of harp has a big, yeah, it's true. It had a big resonating box. It's not like the European sort of classical harp. It has a big resonating box because it has, like, so that you can hear the bass notes,
cool.
Which are the notes that everybody knows makes everybody dance. So I had this big resonating box. And so the story is that at some point in those parties, when everybody was, you know, getting down, somebody would start banging on the box of the harp to kind of like, you know, make it more, bring the energy up. And some people say that then they would, you know, obviously they would start breaking harps, and then the harpist would get really mad at them and say, get your own. And they would say, like, get your own box. So people started making their own box to accompany these dances. So the most important dance that the cajon was used for many, many years, the only sort of dance that the cajon was used for was called the samacueca. And it's now called marinera. It's sort of like a couple's dance. And then in the 20th century, the cajon started to be used in other genres that we also have in Creole music. Like we have Creole waltzes, for example, Creole polkas, even things like foxtrots, you know, and another kind of like sort of cosmopolitan dances, no? That we have our own sort of versions of.
Huh, that is really interesting. I would have never pinned the harp and cajon together ever.
Yeah,
in a historical context, but that's really, really interesting. Mm.
Well, and the harp, by the way, the harp is really, is very used in Peru, a very important instrument, but in the mountains, in the highlands, not so much in the coast anymore. In the coast, it was replaced by the guitar. Now the guitar is the most important one.
Mm.
But in the highlands, the harp is still like the hottest instrument.
Cool. Gotta go to Peru. I've heard... I learned, and I'm not 100% sure if this is 100% true, but that the potato actually came to Ireland from Peru.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Which is wild. Like, what? Because I'm Irish.
So did hot peppers, so did tomatoes, so did chocolate.
That's just, it's a history. It's full of surprises, you know?
Yep.
So Kune is an 11-piece ensemble of musicians from all over the world. How did you guys, each of you, find your way into the group? And then what's the origin story? Like, how did it come together?
You want to take that
you
one,
go,
Matthias?
You go.
Okay, I'll go. Yeah, in 2000, I think 2016, right? I think that was right. The Royal Conservatory of Music here, they had a, like, they got, there was the celebrations of 250 years of Canada.
150.
Sorry. Yeah. And the Royal Conservatory had to create, like, they created this project of creating a band, kind of an orchestra, you know, with the face of Canada, of the city of Toronto. And then they did auditions throughout the country. To pick 11 musicians to be part of this orchestra, to create new material, to create a show, you know. And I did these auditions, and I was one of the musicians chosen to be there. And I think most of the musicians on the group, we all went through the same process. And that's how kind of really how Kune started. And before we weren't even called Kune, we were called like the Canadian, I don't even know, it's such a huge name, Canadian World Music Global Orchestra
Ensemble.
Yeah. And yeah.
That's really cool. So because it's Toronto specifically, but then it sounds like Canada in general, you guys have people from all immigrants from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's really diverse. And so they wanted to create, an ensemble that reflects that. So what is it like, you know, collaborating and playing, coming together with all these different genre, like styles and traditions? How does that like work musically speaking?
So I think the idea of the the original group was to have 12 musicians that were immigrants to Canada. That's why it was called the New Canadian Global Music Orchestra. That was the actual name. So it was, it's, you know, it was, it had this message of like, these are the new Canadians, the new people, the new, yeah, citizens of this country, but who all have immigrant backgrounds. And the idea was to get people that play traditional music from their countries, to that know the traditions from their countries or their regions, no? So so that's how we got selected. We were 12 of us in the beginning. Now we're 11 because one of our members, he passed away in 2018, Dorji Tsering from Tibet. How is it to play music with people from all these? It's both hard and easy. So I think in a way it's hard because, you know, because traditional music has a certain dynamic, right? Like it has, you know, certain instruments, it has a certain logic to it, you know, certain instruments that go together because they have sort of the same volume or that they just go well together over time, you know, these traditions have distilled into something that kind of makes sense. And so to put them together, like for example, Alini, she plays this instrument called the alfaya, which is like, you know, for maracatu, and these are big ensembles, 60 people playing on the street. And the idea is that this should be as loud as possible, no? And then you have next to her, Padide, who's playing the tar, which is an instrument that is very delicate, that is meant to be played inside like a kind of salon, you know, sort of like a mandolin kind of thing, you know? And so, and then you have on the other side, like Luis Dennis from Cuba playing on the saxophone, you know? So these instruments are not meant to go together. You know, one is meant to be playing outside or next to a drum set, and the other one is meant to be played with next to a little drum that's pretty quiet, you know? So there's different dynamics. And then there's the issue of like things, for example, as like tuning, right? For example, you know, you have the bass guitar, Paco Lubian is our bass player, and the bass guitar is traditionally tuned in the tempered scale, right? But then you have some of the songs that we play that, for example, Padide, who's from Iran, Padide Arnejad, some of the songs that she plays have different tuning systems. Now they use like the commas, which are like, you know, different sort of intonations of notes that are not in the tempered scale. They're not in the piano. You can't play them with the piano. They're sort of in between the notes of the piano. So we have to figure, it's possible, but you have to kind of figure it out. And there's a lot of learning that happens, you know, different rhythms that might be like the same meter, for example, but they have different ways of being accented, you know? So that's the hard part is, but you can solve it with like just learning, you know? If you have, that's the part that is easy, is that we have people in Kune that are very eager to learn and to adapt, you know? And that's the cool thing about, you know, because traditional music, yes, it's traditional, but it doesn't mean that it's static. It doesn't mean that it's gonna stay the same forever. And so part of what we have to do, our responsibility as musicians in Kune, is to like expand those traditions, to play in a way that still sounds like the original, you know, that is rooted. But that doesn't mean you can't expand what those traditions can do, you know, that you can come up with new techniques to play softer or adapt the rhythms so that they will fit better with the other melody that the other person brought, or that you can't play commas with the bass, or that you cannot play like a certain accompaniment with a tempered instrument that is going to go well with the comma melody. You know, you find the ways, you find the in the, you have to be very creative to find new ways of making music. But that's relatively easy when you have people that are good, great musicians and that are open-minded and are willing to learn and interested in learning. And that's what we have in Kune, is a bunch of people who are really interested in learning and expanding what they can do with their instruments.
I'm not sure. No, that's really insightful, and it makes me think, you know, I'm like, this sounds like cultural diplomacy through music, mm-hmm. you know, but what is some of your, as the group, like some, your mission, you know, and it, yeah.
Aline, you want to say something?
You always leave the hard one for me.
Always.
Well, I don't know. Like, I think those answers are very personal in a way, you know, because we are a group, but at the same time, it's very hard to take 11 people and know and kind of put it in a box. And this is what we're going for. I think what Matthias said is, it's one big thing of us being together, you know, is that every single individual in Kune, we are willing to learn from each other. We are willing to adapt, you know, like to not be just so stuck in the concept, you know, like, oh, this is how maracatu has to sound, because if we want that, we should not be part of Kune, you know, we have to be within our little communities, you know, Brazilian community, Peruvian community. So I think we also, as a group of musicians, of a group of creative beings, you know, we are all there with one mission, you know, to create music, in a way also being all immigrants, to improve a little bit this industry, you know, that it's very hard when you're not in your homeland, you know, to educate. I think there's so many things that we can say that I, even though we never really sat down to, you know, to come up with a mission, but naturally and organic, that's how Kune was shaped, and it was shaping our way, you know, like, because of this many things that we have in common as individuals, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's my personal view of what is Kune's mission. And also, I think, you know, I work in different projects with a lot of people, and really Kune, the way the dynamics we have with each other, you know, the environment that we create when we are together is, it's very rare, you know, it's so inclusive, it's such a safe space, you know, for everybody. And I think this is also, you know, this is how it should be anywhere in any kind of work, you know, not just in the music industry. So I think there's so many little things that we can point it out as a group that mm-hmm. guide our work as a mission, as almost like a, you know, a state, like, how do you call the, you know, when you write and.
Like a mission statement? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like you captured it beautifully, though, just now. Yeah, it makes complete sense. Matthias, do you have anything? Yeah.
I would add that, well, Kune started in the conservatory in 2016. But since 2020, we've become an independent collective. We're no longer a project of the RCM. And so I think the original idea of Kune, there were different, like, reasons for doing Kune. One was to provide sort of a visibility platform, because, you know, the Corner Hall is an institution that has very well respected. It's like one of the best, or maybe the best venue in the city, and so they bring like high class acts, right? But immigrant musicians in Toronto have a hard time achieving a certain degree of visibility, even though, you know, they're great musicians, and even though they might be for many years in the country. So I think part of the idea for the Corner Hall was, how do we provide a platform that visibilizes all these great musicians that we have in the city? So that was part of the mission, you know, and it, you know, it really worked. Like, we played in some of the best venues in the country, and like, and festivals, and we recorded an album, and we had all this kind of support, you know, because we were part of this platform. But because it's an institution, and because it has this sort of like kind of a rigidity, you know, that all institutions have, I feel like there was a little bit of a rigid sort of model, like, you know, like you were saying, like, cultural diplomacy through music. Like it felt a little bit like we were the UN of music, you know, mm-hmm. and everybody's representing a different country. And I feel like that was sort of the nature of the project. But as we started working together and creating music, we all felt a little bit uncomfortable with this, you know, because we are individuals, right? We all have our own stories and we all have a relationship to our country, but it's not like a one-to-one relationship to our country. No, we can't claim to represent, I cannot claim to represent Peru in any meaningful way. But I can represent myself, and myself is, I have a relationship with my country, with my region, with different musical traditions. You know, I learned a bunch of things from Peru, but also from different countries. Like I studied Cuban music for a long time. You know, I studied jazz, you know, and like North American music. So, and that's the same for everybody in Cune. Everybody in Cune has a different relationship to their country, their culture, the music that they learned from there, and different kinds of music they've learned over the years, you know? So as we became an independent, we're trying to move away from this sort of like UN of music. And still, you know, we still have a connection to the music that we grew up with the music that we love, but we try to make it more, make that space more complex, you know, not make it such so rigid. And so, you know, so whenever we make music or whenever we talk about our music, we try to emphasize that, you know, the people in Cune, yes, we come from different countries, but we are all like complicated weirdos, you know?
Sure. Like you any know? Yeah.
Like anybody in the world. Yeah. Like anybody, you know? And that's sort of like, that's also, I feel like, if there is a message, it's that, you know? And we sort of have this, the message is sort of implicit in the way that we make music, which is it's sort of a little bit of a model of how we feel comfortable being immigrants in this country, you know, because like when you leave your country, the experience of migration is something that we share with a lot of people in Toronto and all over the world. You know, many people have been displaced or have chosen to leave their country or whatever, or their home or their home base or whatever. And there's always this sense of loss because you lose your home and you miss your home and there's a nostalgia for that place. But there's also this sense of like adventure and possibility. So when you come to Toronto, when I came to Toronto, you know, especially after joining Cune, I started meeting all these great musicians from all over the world. I started learning so much about things I had no idea about. And part of what Cune requires of you is that you bring your full sort of musical self, you know? Like, don't leave, because some of the projects I play in are more like mainstream, and so I'm not bringing any Peruvianness to these mainstream music projects, you know what I mean? But in Cune, it's sort of like, bring everything, all your full, everything you have, you know, in your bag of music, bring it, and we'll work with it, right? So, and that's one of the things. And the other thing is like, once you have all that, all those influences together, then you have to make music that is, that feels more or less authentic to everybody, you know, that it feels not like a artificial sort of thing, but you also have to make it open enough that everybody can bring their full selves into the picture, you know? And it sounds complicated, but it's actually not that complicated. You can always find things, and sometimes you find weird, unexpected things. For example, I started playing with Padide one time, and we actually recorded one of her albums with Alini too. So I was playing the cajon, and the cajon, we have this rhythm called festejo, which is kind of a 6-12-8, 6-8 rhythm, but it's not a typical 6-8. It's not like a square 6-8. It has sort of like a different groove, you know. And so I started playing this, and Padide is like, oh, this is an Iranian groove. And I'm like, no, it's Peruvian, you know? And so she played me this song, and it's like exactly the same groove. And so she said like, oh, can you record in my album? Can you play exactly that for this traditional Persian Iranian tune? And so, yeah, and so you find all these strange coincidences, you know? Some of them might have some historical significance. I don't know. I'm not sure, but they exist. And so we use that, no? And some of them we know, for example, you know, Lasso, Sanu, who's from Burkina Faso, is from West Africa. Some of the rhythms that he plays and some of the kind of rhythmic devices that he uses, mm-hmm. you can find them in Afro-Brazilian music, you can find them in Afro-Peruvian music. You know, we know about that connection, right? So, you know, it's an interesting way to explore, like you were saying, how we're all connected, sometimes randomly because we're all humans, and sometimes through history because, like, even though we might be in separate countries now, whatever, music doesn't really care about, like, what country you're from. If you listen, if you hear a cool song from your neighbor, you're going to sing it because it's cool, not because it's from your country.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's so fascinating. Those kind of musical similarities and continuities is, like, that's, like, the whole premise, like, why I started this show. It actually started because of the pandero.
Mm.
The rhythm, like the Bayao rhythm, is the same as here in Charleston in the Low Country. There's a group of people called the Gullah people. Have you guys heard mm-hmm. of them? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the Gullah clap is actually the same rhythm as Bayao, which was mm-hmm. wild. Like when I got back to Charleston after spending some time in Brazil, I was like, what? And mm-hmm. so that, and of course, because of the enslaved Africans that were brought over from Angola landed here in Charleston, but also in Brazil. And so just that shared, background, but it's so interesting. That's really fascinating. Do you have any other examples that come to mind?
There's lots. For example, we have Selçuk Sunas from Turkey. He's an amazing clarinet and saxophone player. And we also have Demetrios Petzalakis, who's from Greece. And so, you know, now they have a band, actually. They have a Turkish-Greek band. And, you know, the Greek and the Turkish have a very complicated, violent history between those two countries, you know, of genocide and displacement, war, you know. But they share so much music. Like, they're constantly finding songs that have both lyrics, like melodies that have lyrics in Greek and Turkish, you know. Dimitri will sing a song. And then Sergio's like, oh, you have that too? It's like, you know? And that's, sometimes with Kune, we play one of those songs called Opanina. And it's a melody that, you know, it's neither Greek or Turkish. Like, also, who cares? Like, they have the same song in both countries and they have different lyrics. So now we sing that song and Dimitri will sing one verse and Selçuk will sing another verse. And then one day Padide is like, oh, I have a verse. Like, she just made up a verse. And then I said, oh, maybe I can come up with a verse. So I sing a verse in Spanish, you know? And it's interesting because we've been playing that song for, I don't know, 3-4 years. And we played it in different, like, venues. We played it in schools. We played it on stages. And now I feel like a lot of people know this song in Toronto. It's like one of the songs of this, you know? And then other people started singing this song in their shows, you know? It's kind of strange.
Wow.
But really cool. So yeah, that's another example, you know, of
yeah.
And then, you know, and they'll sing it in a slightly different flavor, you know. It's not exactly the same. They have different way of ornamenting the melody. They have a different way of, like, you know, a rhythmic kind of feel to it. But if you just try, you can put them together, you know. And you can, it's not so much about keeping it, you know, all the authentic sort of Greek style of the song.
Yeah,
but there is also the opposite, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of this whole, you know, when we, oh my God, we meet in such a common, you know, we hit the spot. There's also the opposite. You hear something, a rhythm, and you're like, what the heck is that? You know where? Like, it's so hard. There's something that it's so hard for, like, to wrap your mind around it. You know, it's like it just feels so unnatural. Even mm-hmm. though you understand, you don't, your body doesn't really understand, you know. There's always a little bit of tension when you hear whatever rhythm. So, you know, the crazy
that's
things real. Of music. Yeah.
And that's you can tell them the example of Obeso, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we first started the group, we all, you know, we have to bring a melody and a song and something that we wanted to create. And Lasso from Burkina Faso, he came, he brought this song. And he started to teach and nobody really could understand, you know, like, and it took us a while to actually be able to play live the music in a way that we're all comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel it's like with Obeso, right? It was something like that. I think even nowadays, I don't think it makes sense sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
So you have to look at someone that is playing some sort of pattern that it makes sense to you, so you don't lose, you know, you don't fall apart.
Sure.
Yeah. So that can also happen, right? Like this whole thing, we can meet ourselves in such good places, but also like sometimes it's just like completely like, you know, unknown. Exactly.
Completely foreign.
Yeah.
Completely like different, from a different planet. Like you've never heard anything like this. And it's also true that, you know, sometimes it starts like that and then you get used to it. Like it happened to me about like, you know, the commas, like the different intonations that they use in Middle Eastern music. You know, in the beginning it was completely alien to me. Like I heard some Outram record or something like that, and I kind of like knew that, to me in my mind, that sounds like exotic Arabian Nights kind of thing. You know what I mean?
A soap opera in Brazil.
Exactly. Yeah. This Turkish soap opera that my aunt watches, you know? but over time, it becomes sort of like, I've been playing with these people in Kune and outside Kune for a long time, and I played Turkish music and Greek music. And over time, it becomes sort of like part of your your musical normal, you know? Like it becomes, and you start liking it, and you start kind of, it becomes sort of part of your musical imagination too, and then you start hearing it.
Cool.
So it's, yeah, it's a matter of history, you know. That's how all traditions sort of become something else.
Through
time.
Yeah, through time and people moving different places and all of those things. That's so cool. So tell me about some of your current projects you guys have going on.
Okay, I will talk because Aline, I wrote
the man.
Yeah. I was writing. So our last album it's called Universal Echoes. And, you know, it has these suites that each suite is dedicated to an element. So we have earth, fire, wind, water. And so, you know, the story behind that is, you know, it's kind of, it's about, you know, the album itself, the whole thing is sort of about climate crisis, you know, which was something that before last year was on everybody's mind, you know, and still is, but there's other worse things happening, unfortunately. So we were trying to think, you know, everybody's life, no matter where you come from, everybody's life is affected by the climate crisis, you know, different parts of the world. And we are all connected in somehow to people and communities who are experiencing this in different parts of the world. So it's sort of like a human problem, mm-hmm. right? So we try to kind of like make music that would speak to this issue from different perspectives and kind of put them together, you know? So that was sort of the concept of that album. And that album actually won an award, Canada Folk Music Award. There's a category called Pushing the Boundaries. So we pushed those boundaries and we got that award.
Nice.
And now the next project we want to do is something that is relatively new. But we want to do something that is talking about missing and disappeared people, which is another common problem, you know, in the world. So every country has people who are political prisoners or people who have been murdered. Like here in Canada, there's this huge issue of the missing and murdered Indigenous women, which is, you know, similar to other movements like Ni Una Menos in Latin America, which is, you know, about women being murdered and disappeared. So there's also like different cases of, again, political prisoners. You know, I was just listening to the news in Peru about these four young kids from an Indigenous community who were put in jail because they were participating in anti-government protests. And they've been sentenced like unfairly. So there are cases for this unfair, you know, disappearances, even if they're still alive or temporary or whatever, they are all over the world. So we wanted to do an album that is sort of talking about that in a way that it's like in a way that is just bringing attention to this issue, you know, and doing in because it's such a human problem, doing it from different perspectives, you know, not necessarily like from a nationalist perspective, but from a human perspective, you know.
Yeah.
Draw attention to those problems from, and make music together like that from, you know, like we've been doing for a while. So it's like a, it's still in the process. We don't have any concrete examples for you to give you. It's still an idea, but we're
really excited. Strong.
We got some grant funding from the Canada Council, and we have a date to premiere the work in 2026 in February, in Kingston in Ontario. In a very nice theater. So we're going to start working on that in December.
Very cool. I wasn't, you know, I've heard artists and musicians, artists of all, you know, mediums, but musicians, you know, talk about the climate crisis, but I haven't really heard anyone discuss like missing people as like a common human, which is so true. I mean, it's absolutely something that all over the world, yeah, it's happening. And so that's going to be really interesting. Is that with Dan?
Sorry?
Is that with Dan Rosenberg?
Yeah, Dan Rosenberg. Yeah.
Oh, he's great. Yeah, he, all of his projects are super interesting. You know, the other one that came to mind after we started talking was Lenka Lichtenberg.
Mm-hmm.
Her project, she was on the show talking about.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, her project. Silent Tears, maybe?
Mm-hmm. I think
yeah.
so. I think
that's the name. And then she went on, I think she won a Juno for it.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So really powerful storytelling through yeah. music. And then, yeah, and then just the, you know, human experience. So, wow, that's going to be really, really interesting. And then personally, like, I know you guys also have your own musical projects going on. Is there anything that you want to talk about while we're here on the air?
Yes, Alini.
I think these days, I think my main focus actually is being Kune, but I do, you know, I do many other things. I think as musicians, we all have to kind of have this capability of working on many projects, on with many people. So I have also my own music that I write, you know, in Portuguese. I have two albums. My first album was a Juno nominated album. Okay. I didn't win, but I went to the party.
Hey.
And yeah, I also teach a lot. I've been working, I mean, since I came to Canada, I've been working with this very specific tradition. I don't know if you ever, if you happened to see when you were in Brazil, maracatu.
I've heard of it, but I'm not familiar.
Yeah, it's mainly from Recife. It's a city on the northeast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, so even before moving to Canada, I was already working, researching, you know, like it was something that it's part of my life since I started in this music journey. And it was something that I actually brought to Canada. I think I was the first person to bring maracatu to North America, actually.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah, and I think Canada came, we had maracatu here even before the U.S. Now there's maracatu in many places in the USA, but I think I started here in Canada, and it's such a big part of my life, you know, of what I am as a musician as well. So now it's cool because I'm teaching maracatu in the university, and to have maracatu in that kind of context, it's very powerful, especially for people that are the owners of this culture, you know, when they see, oh, look at where our music, you know, our treasure it is right now, you know, in an academic concept, which is very unusual because it's such a strong Afro-Brazilian tradition, life tradition from small communities. Yeah, so, you know, many things.
Yeah.
We do many things, but I think this day, like this year specifically, I think I'm very focused on, you know, the work we're doing with Kune. We have lots of things coming up, great stuff, you know, like, so yeah, that's where I am right
Very
now.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And Matthias?
Well, I don't have a soloist album like Alini does. Soon, hopefully, maybe one day. But I do play with different bands in the city. And like I was telling you, like Toronto has a very interesting scene that is growing right now. We have lots of bands and projects that are sort of the same spirit as Kune, you know, like bringing different influences together, different traditions together. And it's very organic because it's just the way the music scene is. We really have a lot of like great musicians from different parts of the world, you know? And we're all trying to make it, and you know, the Canadian music industry, like any music industry, is really hard and is really like narrow, right? There's very little space for other things that are not mainstream. But you know, I think through this like community that we're building and some venues, for example, there's a very famous drum in New York, but we have our little small drum here in Toronto, Drum DROM, and it's a very important place for this scene because they truly program everything, you know, from like, well, it doesn't matter if you're like an Armenian psychedelic new wave, you know, DJ, or if you are a country band, you know, they really book everything, and you can walk into. And they have live music all day, like since five in the afternoon until sometimes 4 in the morning. Yeah. And so they do a great work of like creating a space where you can really do whatever you want, where they're not like policing your style or trying to police your authenticity or whatever. If you're a musician and you play well, then you can play whatever you want at drum. And there's a audience sort of growing for that because, again, like, it's not just musicians that are coming from everywhere. It's like people in any kind of job, office job, like, you know, any kind of work, people are coming from all over the world. And so in this scene, you can always find, I think this scene is cool because the same way as Kune, you can, doesn't matter where you're from, you can probably find something that you can relate to, like from your region, you know? Like it's an instrument or a melody or a rhythm or whatever, but you'll probably hear it next to something completely different or in a context that you never heard it before. So it sounds fresh. And sometimes you'll hear some things that are completely alien to you, something you've never heard before, but maybe you'll hear it with a beat or with a sort of in a language that you're familiar with or something like that. So there's like, I think that if there is a message in Kune and this kind of Toronto music scene that some people are calling a global music scene, we can't find a agreeable name for this, you know? I think we all just want to call it music and like stop people bothering us with different labels. But if there is sort of a message, is that, you know, cities like Toronto, they are very diverse, and that is not a problem. It's like it's an opportunity, you know? But right now, the way that the cultural industry is working and the way it's not easy, you know? The way that sort of the institutions and the systems work, it's not easy to have public spaces that are open for everybody to feel comfortable and to share, you know, spaces of sharing who you are, learning about other people. You know, it's all kind of awkward. It's all kind of like, I don't know. You know, I don't know if I can bring all myself completely to this space. I don't know if I can be curious about somebody else, you know, and what they do. There's a lot of like awkwardness. So I feel like the opportunity is there, you know, like all the historical places that kind of were the center of innovation were super diverse, like Baghdad in the Middle Ages, you know. Latin America, you know, all these places were super diverse, and that's where you get new things from, you know.
Totally.
When people start meeting each other and learning from each other different techniques, different ways of cooking meals, different ways of, like, you know, making stuff, making music. But so in the arts, we have a little bit of an opening in music to sort of like propose something new, you know, and like kind of model something, you know, like you, if you just like stop argue, like stop, you know, arguing and being like awkward and just like be more interested and be more open, you can learn a lot from other people, you know, and you can create new things.
100%. 100%. And so, well, this is my last question for you guys. And it's really been such a pleasure to talk with you and learn about, you know, your music scene, the music you guys play in Kune, and just your backgrounds in general. But the concept of the show is, you know, using music as a medium to explore ways in which we're all connected. And I feel like you both have definitely spoken to this already in some fashion during our conversation. But any last words on that? Alini, if you want to go. Sorry, it's a hard, I hope it's not too hard.
I know, that's very hard.
You can do it, Alini.
There's no wrong answer. That's
okay,
the best
can
part.
You start so I have an idea of what you're going to say? No, I'm just...
Me? You're on your own, Alini.
This one is very hard, Matthias, please.
No, it's not hard, Alini.
It can be from the heart.
You are a master of community making through music.
There you go.
Okay. Can you repeat the question?
Okay, Alini, I'll help you. I'll
my
help
God.
You.
Okay.
I'll help you. Like the way, you know, Maracatu in Toronto brings people together. You've seen it and you've kind of made it happen. So you can just use that as an example.
Yeah. Exactly. I think it's like, you know, like with music and has this power, right? Of creating community, of what Matthias just said, of bringing people together, you know, like, I don't know what it would be of me if I had decided to come here with a completely different approach, like not music, I don't know. Let's say I decided to come here with a different, you know, pursuing a different thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would have been here, you know, so far, because that's the power of music, right? It's like bringing people together, unite, you know, like even though you don't speak the same language, you don't play the same instruments, the rhythms are completely different, we're still together, you know, there's somehow a huge connection between us that glues us together. And it's like, it's such a hard career as well, you know, like I think lately a lot of the musicians are been struggling and with leaving off this, you know, this thing that we are so passionate about it. But yet, you know, there's something why we're doing this, right? There's something why we keep going. You know, I've thought about giving up so many times and I can't, you know, like, it's stronger than me. And I think that's the power of music. And it doesn't matter where you come from, doesn't matter, you know, like your religion, your background, the color of your skin, is like music that has it, arts in general has a power. It, you know, it's going to save the world. So,
amen. I'm right there with you. Beautifully said.
I would just add that it was great, Alini. Don't get me wrong.
No, you can add whatever. You always add important things.
No, because I just feel that like, you know, in a city like Toronto, there's so many people and we're all in the same physical space together and in the subway or whatever, but not really together, you know. But whenever you have like I was thinking about pedestrian Sundays, we have a thing in there's an area in Toronto called the Kensington Market, and they have pedestrian Sundays where they close the streets on certain Sundays and there's music. And so Aline is always playing there with the maracatu. And, you know, I never see people actually being together, like, you know, smiling and dancing and like, just like it doesn't have that. Like music creates this special sort of like, it's like a magic dust, mm-hmm. you know, where everybody around it is sort of suddenly like smiling and like feeling like together. Like those are the times that I feel like this is my city, you know, mm-hmm. even though I'm not originally from here. when I see like people on the streets like playing music, and this, you get this just nice feeling, you know. And of course it's like temporary because the music stops and then everybody goes back to their job or whatever, but you need that in a city like Toronto. You need those moments, you know, and music is so powerful. It's just like, it's like immediately you start playing, you know, especially if it's a kind of music like the one that Aline is doing, you know, like this kind of community sort of like, you know, powerful thing.
Sure. And for a group, it sounds like in a group. I mean, I also think rhythm is just a unique facet of music too, like type of where you just can't help but it moves you in a, in a literally sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like, you know, cities like Toronto, we need those moments, you know?
Yeah.
We need those spaces. And music is just such a powerful, immediate thing that, like, creates that those moments instantly, you know?
So true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, like, Toronto doesn't have, like, an amazing musical tradition, you know? Like, it doesn't have, like, an historical tradition of music. So it is, in that sense, it's a little bit, I mean, there are some scenes that happened here, but immigrant musicians, that we bring so much, you know, so much value in that sense, you know.
I've been living in Toronto now like 23 years, and you know, I've seen a lot, you know, the transformation in how the city approaches all that, like how now, you know, we that are part of this community of immigrant musicians, we are part of this culture, you know, like summers in Kensington Market, for example, which is a huge place, you know, in the huge reference in the city. Would it be completely different if we weren't here, you know, like using this public spaces as a, you know, like a place for us as well to be there playing music, you know, eating our food, having fun. And really, we created like a huge identity for this city. Mm-hmm. You know, the music scene, I find that way, right?
Yes, absolutely. And so it's not just musicians. Like, there's also, like in Kensington Market, there's like venue owners who are immigrants. You know? There's an Iranian bar owner. There's an Armenian. There is the owner of drum is Russian. There's, you know, Turkish. There's all kinds, and I feel like part of the reason why this is happening is because, you know, now we're living here and we miss that sort of public culture, like street culture in our countries, you know, so we're trying to reproduce it here. But because like nobody can recreate their popular kind of street culture, because there's not enough of like a particular, not enough Turkish people to like colonize like a part of the city, or Peruvians or Brazilians. So you end up having this sort of like mix of things. And that is so much cooler than trying to reproduce like a particular, you know, like create something new. That's why we're saying, you know, that's how you get something new, is when you get different people in this, that different experiences, different styles, you put them together, you know, in one place.
So true. Yeah. Man, I got to book it. I got to come to Toronto. You guys really do have, like I said, we're selling it. Yeah, you're selling it well. And I've just spoken to other musicians who were there who are doing really interesting things.
Just don't come between November and April.
Deal. Is it really cold?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I can't do that. Okay, perfect. In this early summer then. But where can people find you guys online and all that good stuff? Social media.
Kune has a website, www.kuneworld.com, and that's also our Instagram, and that's also our Facebook, Kune World, Kune World.
We're also on Spotify. Mm-hmm.
Spotify.
Spotify
too,
as well.
All the good things is Kune World, Kune. And
mine is Aline Morales 1 on Instagram, Facebook, mm-hmm. stuff like
and
that.
Matias Recharte, keeping it easy.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll link in the show notes, also add links to everything so people can find them there as well. Thank you guys again. This was awesome.
Thank you. And if you come to Toronto, let us know. We'll be your tour guides.
I definitely will. I might have to take a Pandero lesson, Alini, from...
All good.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Even better, yeah.
So this first track that we're going to listen to is called Aqua by Kune. And if you have access to a computer, I definitely recommend checking out the music video too. I love the energy behind this piece and all the rhythm changes it goes through. I hope you enjoy. Quero ver aonde a sereia canta, quero ver na cidade de Alcântara, quero ver. That was awesome. The second tune we're going to listen to in today's episode is by Alini, who is also a solo artist, and recorded this next original piece called Yansa with Okan, which is another Toronto-based group that has been on Travel Notes before. So kind of a small world moment. This is a really cool track. I hope you enjoy. Thank you. I love that. I'll include links to Alini, Kune, and Matthias's music and websites in the show notes. If you want to connect with me online, you can do so at my website, gracemcnallymusic.com, under the Travel Notes tab, or on social media at travelnotes_podcast or Grace McNally Music. Both will get you there. Thanks again for listening to today's episode, and stay tuned because our next trip is just around the corner.